welcome to Section 9. My name's Damien Hull.
And I'm Dorothy. And today we're going to be talking about the new CIS critical security controls.
And this is version 7. And the CIS critical security controls are from the Center for Internet Security. And they're the ones that maintain this list. And there's 20 of them. And we've talked about these before, but these are new. And this new version is really cool because they've broken them down into three sections. You have basic, foundational, and then you have organizational. And we're going to relate these back to our Raspberry Pi project, where we have our data center. And then we're also going to relate these back to some of the things that you might want to do within an organization and how you might do that.
So the first one is inventory and control of hardware.
So in this case, what they're looking for is just an inventory of all the hardware devices you have on the network. And that's a workstation, a laptop, a wireless access point, a server, a switch, anything that plugs into the network. That's what they're looking for. What they want you to do here is to understand what you have on your network. Any device that shouldn't be there, get rid of it. Any old device that you're not using, get rid of it. These are going to be things that could potentially become problems later on because it may be a device that somebody else plugged in and it's maybe like kind of like a hacker device. I've heard stories about that. And then you may have devices that are just not used anymore. Get rid of those because those are going to be vulnerabilities on your network and could cause problems later on down the road.
So you're saying if somebody plays a rogue device or if there is a old piece of equipment that nobody really is using, nobody really knows is there, but somebody can actually take the opportunity to hack into it?
Correct. And so what you want to do here is when you do your inventory, it doesn't necessarily have to be fancy. You can use a spreadsheet. If you have like a handful of devices, like for your Raspberry Pi project, your data center, there's only a few devices that you need to be aware of. So you're going to just do a spreadsheet. You'll also have that inside of ITOP. And these are going to be a list of all the things you have, all the Raspberry Pis, your switch, your workstation. And the reason you're doing that is so you know what you have. And later on, when we see some of the other things on the list, we can use your inventory to help make sure that we fill in the blanks on some of the other controls they have listed there.
Okay, let's move on to the second one. The second one is inventory and control of software assets.
This is all of the software you have within your organization. So that can be software that's on a server, on a workstation, on a laptop, on maybe a mobile device like an iPhone or iPad. You want to inventory all of that so that you know what you have, know what you have to support, and then also know what you have to update. If it's a third-party application, you need to be updating that.
So here's a question that I have. You know, while doing my data center, when we installed the software, the
Raspbian
Stretch Light. I'm sorry, I was having a moment of mental pause in there. But when we installed that, one of the things is, it made the keyboard default to the UK keyboard. So we ended up having to configure that. Now, I know that I did that, and you know that I did that. But let's say that we were in an organization where somebody would need to know, like when you were talking about the updates, you know, knowing what to update and knowing what to do or whatever. Let's say that they have to maybe install a new server and using the same software because it's in the inventory. And, you know, we're saying this is the software that you have to use. Where would you document that? Would you document that in the inventory and control of software assets? Would you do it on the hardware since the keyboard, it is a peripheral, but it is hardware. So, you know, or would you just leave it on ITOP?
Well, so in ITOP, we have this idea of a configuration management database.
Right.
And what you're talking about is a software setting. For organizations that don't have any kind of software like we do with ITOP, what you would do is you would have documentation that would say, okay, here we have Raspbian Stretch Lite. How are we going to configure that? It's like with your process for doing the basic configuration. Part of that process, along with configuring the network interface, making sure SSH is in there, you are also making sure that you change the default keyboard layout to US so that we can actually use our US keyboard. So it's part of your documentation. I think this is a good question to have now, because when you do this in the real world, sometimes it can be confusing as to what they're really asking for and you want to make sure you have the right information in the right location. So this would go along with the documentation that you might have for setting up a new server or as part of the installation process of the OS.
So when they're looking at the inventory and control of either hardware or software, they're going to also refer to the notes because, you know, so many organizations don't have that documented. And that's what I'm saying is you're coming into a place saying, hey, I'm going to do your security. This is what I'm going to do. You're not going to know that part of it.
You may not. And you may have to double check that.
Mm-hmm.
And that may be something that you have to tell them, hey, this should be documented.
Right.
You need a process for these kinds of things. This is a step that needs to be part of that process.
Okay. All right. So let's move on to number three, which is the continuous vulnerability assessments and remediation. What is that about?
So this one is a little bit more difficult. And when we talk about smaller organizations or even medium-sized organizations, they may have a difficult time trying to understand what this means. And in basic terms, it means you're trying to figure out where the vulnerabilities are and make sure you take care of those by patching your systems, introducing new controls to prevent somebody from using that vulnerability or weakness within, let's say, your operating system or a device on the network. So in the case of Windows, we have Windows updates, right? So Windows updates are going to fix certain vulnerabilities within Windows that were there, and now you fix them because you installed the new updates. You also have to take a look at third-party applications that may have vulnerabilities in there, and you want to patch those as well.
So now, will you do that with a vulnerability scanner?
You can do that with a vulnerability scanner. So for our Raspberry Pi data center, we're going to be using OpenVAS to scan that so we can see what's going on. And then when we patch it, we rescan, and we have evidence that, or some tool, in this case, OpenVAS, that's going to show us, hey, here's where you were before, high vulnerability. Here's where you are now after patching, lower vulnerability, right? So it's going to give you numbers that you can look at. Now, for smaller and mid-sized organizations that don't have anybody who knows how to do this or don't have the necessary tools to do this, in their case, I would just say, make sure you are patching your systems and documenting that you are, in fact, patching your systems.
So if you had to create a process for this item, how would you do that? You would say, okay, we check vulnerabilities once a week, once a month, once however, or do you just have the scanner running and then you will determine a time where you would look at the high critical, issues that the vulnerability is telling you to do, or and then you would have to have like a plan of, how do you mitigate this risk? How do you remedy the problem? So how would you do that when you don't really know what kind of things? Would you have to do a baseline first?
In this case, when you get to this part of the process for your data center, you're going to see how this works because you really haven't taken the time to look at what we have in OpenVAS and how that works. I showed it to you once, but that's not enough. So you're gonna run this on your data center once you have services in there, and you're going to see what it is you get. And the recommendation is to scan once a week.
Once a week, okay.
And then that's going to help you determine what it is you're supposed to do. And again, you really should have some kind of vulnerability scanner to really help you understand what's going on. Because one of the things we're going to do, and we're not doing yet, is we're going to be scanning our devices. You're going to scan, let's say, your data center switch, our core switch, and we're going to see what we get back. Now, we don't have a contract with Cisco to get the new updates. And in fact, our switches are actually no longer made. They're not supported anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So we can't get updates for them. But it's going to be interesting to see what we get back when we scan them to see what kind of vulnerabilities are on there.
But the thing is, you're going to have organizations where they have legacy devices that are going to have the same problem. So they're going to have to determine whether they need to do an update to the network by purchasing a new device, or you're going to have to say, okay, if you're not willing to do this and you have this issue and you're not getting the updates, this is the plan on how to mitigate the risk and how to minimize it. Is that what you would do? I mean,
exactly.
Because, if you've been hired to do security, and they're not willing to actually, make a purchase to make their security better, or they can't afford it or what have you, you still have to come up with something that will help, correct?
Correct, you do. And that's how security works. You're trying to look at what you have, and it's also part of the reason why you do your inventory control, your software assets, and then also your vulnerability scanning, because you're trying to figure out what you have and what's going on with these devices and software.
Okay, so let's move on to number four, and that is controlled use of administrative privileges. Talk to us about that.
Yeah, this one is pretty straightforward. If somebody doesn't need to have admin privileges, don't give it to them. And for your IT department, one of the things that I've seen people do is have two accounts. One account is for general use. Another account is for admin privileges. So if I'm sitting at my workstation, I may need admin privileges once in a while when I want to install software. But for most of that, I just need a regular user account. So that's the one I would use on a regular basis for things like, you know, general work, checking my email, typing up a document, that kind of thing.
So what do you do when the CEO says, I want administrative privileges because, you know, I'm the CEO and I want to do that. And then I'm going to take my laptop home and let my kids play in it.
Yeah, so that's something that you have to explain to people. That's where training comes into play. And you explain to upper management that this is not something you want to do. And you give them the consequences of doing that. You may get a virus. You may have software on there that conflicts with work applications. And when that happens, their laptop stops working. When their laptop stops working, what happens? They get all upset and they bring it to you and they say, well, I need this fixed. Now they have no laptop. So one of the things you have to try to do is figure out ways in which you can explain these kinds of things to upper management so they understand why that's a bad idea.
Okay, so let's move on to the next one. Secure configuration for hardware and software on mobile devices, laptops, workstations, and servers.
So in this case, you can go in there and say, okay, this particular workstation or this particular server is going to have these three or four services, nothing else. And then we're going to implement certain security features for certain services and the operating system itself to help keep it secure. That's one way of looking at this.
By limiting the services?
Right, because if there's a service on there that you're not using, why is it there?
Yeah, but to give somebody else an opportunity to exploit it, I see.
Exactly, I get it. Okay. Exactly.
I wasn't looking at it that way, I'm sorry.
No, but that's good. That's good. Those are the kinds of things that we want to learn from this experience. And then also what you can do here is you can use the Center for Internet Security's benchmarks.
Mm-hmm.
And these are a list of things that you can do to a workstation, a server, maybe a service, and it will give you things to turn on or turn off or settings for a particular thing. So there's benchmarks for Server 2012, for Windows 10, for Windows 7, for Linux.
For Chrome.
For Chrome, right. So they have them even for specific applications.
Right.
And so you're going to go in there and set these up according to the benchmark. And there's a lot of work involved in doing that, but that will help you figure out what you need to do to make these systems or applications more secure.
So is the rule of security always given minimum access and then increase the access as they need it? Is that kind of what it is?
Correct.
Okay.
And in the case of the secure controls,
mm-hmm.
or the secure configurations, is you're trying to make sure that your operating system is safe, your applications are safe, your services are safe, and that's why they're asking you to do that.
Okay. The last one, maintenance, monitoring, and analysis of audit logs.
So this is referring back to mostly operating systems, although some applications will have logs as well, but it's going to be someplace within the system where you have, like, for example, I look at the Apache logs for our website.
Mm-hmm.
You can have database logs. You can have your operating system logs, or when somebody logs in, it's going to be logged someplace. Like, we were looking at that at one point when we set up our DigitalOcean servers.
I know. And that's where we were seeing, what was it, 5 minutes into the, we had just gotten done setting up the server, and people were trying, you know, admin user passwords on every IP address that they could find. I mean, you know, it was crazy.
Yeah. And that's the kind of thing that you need to be aware of.
Mm-hmm.
You need to be checking for these things. And it's not just for people trying to log into your systems, but it's also to look for maybe a service is not working anymore. That might be in the logs. It may have issues with other applications. Maybe there's an error message someplace. That might be in the logs. There's a lot of reasons why you should be checking your logs.
And actually, I'd like to interject in here and remind our listeners about the checklist that SANS puts out on how to look at the logs for security purposes. You can see if somebody's actually creating a new user or trying to log in. We will put those on the show notes again for people to actually take a look at them and actually implement them with this. Okay, so that was just...
Hold on. So one of the things that we're going to try to do for the data center, you're going to be looking at individual logs.
Right.
And for small environments, that's fine. For larger environments that have, let's say, hundreds of servers, hundreds of workstations, that you can't do that. There's too many of them. What they have now in IT is log aggregation, where you send your logs to one central location, and then you analyze in that one central location. And for us, we're trying to implement Splunk. I didn't get very far with that the last time I tried to implement it, but that's the tool we're going to try to use to send all of our logs into Splunk, and then we can analyze in one location.
Does Splunk have any features that when they see kind of odd behavior, it would send you an email? Could you configure that like that? For
you
like
can.
If somebody's trying to create a new user or something?
You can do that. I haven't tried that yet, but yes, that's something that you can do with Splunk.
Okay, cool. So I look forward to actually implementing this because I'll be really curious. I wanted to use the SANS checklist on that to actually take a look at the logs, but you know, that'd be kind of interesting.
Yeah, so we've just covered the basic controls. Now we're going to take a look at the foundational, and then we're going to go into some of the organizational. And we're not going to cover all the foundational, but I think that when you look at the basic, some stuff that I think should be there are not there, and they're actually in foundational. So if you take a look at the ones I have in bold, number 8.
Malware defenses?
So malware defenses is just things like antivirus. So that's not under your basic. And I was kind of like, well, why don't they have it under basic? Why is that under foundational? So some things are kind of, in my opinion, it's kind of odd how they do that. But then when you think about all of the things that you're going to be doing to make yourself or your organization more secure, you have to start somewhere. So I do understand that you can't just have everything under one giant list and say, do all of it.
Well, I can tell you that the first 6 items that you have in basics, if those are implemented into the network, you have a little bit more security than most. So I'm thinking that they're actually like being super basic in that respect. And then when they're laying the foundation, that's where they say, okay, you know, now that we got an inventory of the hardware and the software, and we understand that there's these vulnerabilities and we have a plan to deal with them, and, you know, we set out our administrative privileges and we configure our devices in a certain way, and then we know how to maintain it and read the logs. Now we're going to go to the second layer of it where we do the malware defenses, the data recovery capabilities, the control access based on the need to know or whatever it is that they do. So let's go.
Well, hold on a second here. Hold on a second, because one of the things you're bringing up here is, I think, is really important to understand. If, let's say, for example, you have 100 workstations. You need to know that when you go to add in your antivirus software, that one, it's going to work with the existing software you have installed on those workstations. It's not going to conflict with anything. And second, you need to make sure that you're installing it on all the workstations, because maybe there's a laptop or a workstation that's hiding someplace. It's not on your inventory list. You don't install it on there. How are you going to know that you got everything unless you have an inventory?
Right. True. And you know, that's what I'm saying is that this critical security controls, if you even do a portion of them, you're going to be more secure than most, because a lot of people don't think about doing that, or they think it's too hard to implement them, or it's too tedious to be sitting in there and do your inventory and try to figure out these things. I mean, you're seeing now when we're doing our documentation or a checklist, it takes time. You know, first it's total chaos. We don't know what we're doing. We try it. Then we're like, okay, that worked. Let's just try it again and document it. And then the more we try it, you know, the more things we find for those kind of checklists. So anyway, so on the malware defenses that you were talking about, limitation and control of network ports, protocols, and services.
So this
Explain
is number,
that.
No, this is number 9.
Yeah.
So
but
this...
isn't that would be, wouldn't that be under also malware?
No, because we're talking about the network. You may have ports on the network, network control and all that kind of stuff. So that might be on a switch, that may be on a firewall. So there's a lot of things that are going on there. So that's something that you also have to think about. But let's go to number 10, because 9 can be a bit tricky. And some of these we're going to look at when we get to your data center. And we try to do that on the data center. We can talk more about that.
But you know what? I do want to bring something up because I remember one time when we set up one of our projects and we were looking at the ports, you know, you were like adamant, shut down the ports you don't use because it's so easy for somebody to just come in and plug it in and have access to your network.
Right. So when you were talking about your switch, if there's a port on the switch that's not being used, shut it down. Sometimes I'll have you put it into a separate VLAN.
Right.
So if you accidentally turn it on, it's in a VLAN that doesn't go anywhere.
Right.
So talk about number 10, because this is really important.
So number 10, data recovery capabilities.
So in this case, we're talking about your backups.
Mm-hmm.
You gotta have your backups. So there are going to be some things that on the list that I think you may not be able to get to for various reasons. Your backup has to be there. You need that. So I would look at some of these things and say, okay, get all six taken care of, and then start going through foundational and looking at some of these things and saying, okay, within foundational, what's really important?
So within foundational, I guess then the most important thing will be the malware defenses, the data recovery capabilities, and the control access based on the need to know.
Correct. And I think now they have it listed differently, but I would use these as, I would highlight these because these are really, really important.
So explain why.
So if you get malware on your network or you have somebody within the organization that deletes something or worse, let's say, for example, you have a fire. Everything is destroyed. How are you going to put things back if you don't have a backup of your data? So that's something you have to take into consideration. And that's why I would say your backups are huge. They're really important. You have to have them. And when it comes to controlled access based on the need to know, that's very simple. Sometimes hard to implement, but the basics of this is very simple. If I don't need access to a given file, don't give it to me because I shouldn't see that information. And then I don't need access or having access to that may mean that I make a mistake somewhere and delete that file.
Well, not only that, for HIPAA, that's really important. If you don't need to know and you don't need access to that information, you don't need to have access to it. And you know, if you're getting audited by the feds or by, you know, the people that are like, oh, confidential information, you know, you need to make sure that those things are, you know.
Yeah, and I used to work for an organization that did some of that, and it wasn't based on any kind of super secret stuff, although there were certain contracts that people were working on for the government side where it was super secret, and only the people listed in the contract could have access to that information. But that was kind of very rare. That was like a one-off situation. But the organization had general business data that everybody had access to. Then there was financial data. Only finance people had access. And then we had HR data. Only HR people had access. And what was really cool is that the manager, the one who was running the show, he would say, I don't want to see finance data. Don't give it to me. I should not have access. HR data. I'm not the HR person. Don't give me access to that. If I need to know, that will be brought to me.
Okay, that makes sense. The control access based on
right,
need to know.
Right.
Got it.
And that just helps keep everybody safe. Because if
everybody honest.
Right. So if something happens, I never had access to that information to begin with, so it couldn't have been me. Right?
Okay. So let's move on to the organizational controls.
So here's what I want to say about these things. These are a bit more difficult, and some organizations are not going to have the necessary resources to pull this off. So for example, we have incident response and management. Well, what is that? How do you do that? Do you have anybody in IT that can pull this off?
Well, first you need to know what your business considers an incident.
Correct. But for a small organization, that may not be something that they can do because there's nobody there to do that.
True.
And then you have to have a process for that. So for me, when I took my SANS class, it was prepare, identify, contain, eradicate, recover, and then you have lessons learned.
Got it.
That's a lot. There's six phases. So somebody in IT would have to understand that process and be able to pull it off. Now, I think a simple way of doing that, which a lot of organizations may not have, is if something bad happens, a computer gets a virus, it stops working, don't worry about that. Have a backup computer, switch them out. Wipe the device, start all over, put it back. And that to me is the best thing that you can do, because when you're dealing with things like viruses, you don't know what's really going on behind the scenes. You don't know if you've gotten rid of it. You don't know if your AV is really deleting that virus. Maybe there's a piece of it in there that's going to cause issues down the road where the user says, hey, my computer's not working properly.
Mm-hmm.
Pull that out, put a good one in, wipe the device, move on.
Yeah.
That's a simple version of incident response. Some people in security are going to say, you can't do that. You need evidence. Well, if you're in an organization that doesn't have the necessary skills to gather evidence to figure out what's really going on, they're never going to be able to do that anyway.
Yeah, so the quickest way to protect yourself is, like you said, have the you know, restore the backup somewhere and then let it take over and wipe the infected device.
Now, number 20, it says here, penetration test and red team exercises.
Hmm?
That's beyond
when a small business,
you know,
you're lucky if you have an IT department. You may just have one IT guy, or they may just hire a firm just to do their basic security. And I don't really think that a lot of those businesses really understand that they will get hacked, you know, that just because they're small businesses. It doesn't make them immune. You know, they just don't understand. And you know, it kind of makes me feel bad because they really don't have the cash or, you know, the know-how of how to protect themselves. But what I would like to say to them is, like, what is the most important data that makes your business, you know, succeed or make sure that your business runs? And, you know, once that they determine that, if you say, okay, what would happen if somebody were to take hold of that data? Unlock you, I'd like the ransomware that they had not too long ago. You don't have a business. So either you figure out within your means the things that you can do. And some of these, you know, they can be easily implemented if they were to actually have somebody that knows what they're doing.
Yeah. And one of the things kind of surprised me, and I saw this from Black Hills Information Security. They had it on their website. It was on their blog.
Mm-hmm.
They were talking about the critical security controls. And they were looking at it from a small business point of view. And that's where I got the idea of just doing a spreadsheet for inventory, because that's what they recommended.
Right.
So these things don't have to be fancy. You don't necessarily need something like ITOP or a special tool to do this. You can just write it down on a spreadsheet.
Right.
Double check it every so often. Make sure it's kept up to date. And that's going to help you when you get into things like your antivirus software. Are we deploying that on all of our systems? Let's check inventory. Let's make sure we have it all. Those are the kinds of things that we're trying to get or that the Center for Internet Security is trying to get people to do. And the new one, what I really like about that is it's prioritized. I can skip the last section if I want to.
Right.
Because a lot of organizations just can't do that.
No, I mean, I really like the way they organize them, because before, like, you had like the 20 of them. And if you had to pick and choose basic from foundational, from organizational, it would have been really difficult. And now they have them organized that way that you can say, okay, I can do a couple of these, I can do a couple of these, and I can do a couple of these of each section and be okay.
Yeah, and one of the things that I think is important when you're setting up your data center,
mm-hmm,
is to look at the first two and say, okay, how do I do this? And then as you do them, as you start introducing services and other things into your data center, you can begin documenting that information. And it doesn't really matter how you do that. As long as you have it documented, it can be a note someplace in ITOP, it can be part of a spreadsheet. As long as you have it documented, you can always go back later and make it look pretty.
Right.
But
I can add or you know, revamp it or edit it, do whatever I need to do as
right.
It grows.
But the most important thing is to start.
Mm-hmm.
Do something. Have some kind of documentation. Get that inventory done. Make sure you're doing some of these. Even if you only do a couple of them, that's better than nothing at all.
Right.
So any other things you want to add about this?
No.
And I think what's going to happen and what's going to be interesting is to see how this plays out when we get to that point of actually implementing some of these on the data center and see, you know, what really happens, what issues do we have? Because it's, we can talk about them, but then when you go to actually do these things, you run into your issues. You say, oh, gee, it doesn't work as well as I thought it was going to do.
Some of it are simple, But sometimes implementing simple is really not that simple, because we run into that with some of the things that we did in other projects, thinking, well, you know, this really makes sense. And then you try to implement it and it's like, how do we do this? So it'll be interesting to see, and we'll be reporting on the results of that, because, you know, to me, I think it's really a cool project and I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah. And again, you know, the list is helpful because it gives you a place to start.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when you look at frameworks, because this is kind of a framework, security frameworks can be very difficult to work with. And what I like about this one is it's straightforward. You don't necessarily have to go to anybody and say, how do we do this? Or can we do this? Because if you look at that small business one from NIST that we tried to use, and then we said, well, we can't use it, it's too hard. This one, that one was hard because you had to go to management. You had to ask them all these questions. And while this one, I think you should get management involved so they can help tell you what kinds of things you need to back up. But even if you don't do that, you can just jump in, start inventorying, start adding antivirus to different systems. These are the kinds of things that are going to help keep your organization secure. And it's not that difficult to try to do something.
Well, it's like I told you, the basics, even if you just implement the basics alone, is a lot more secure than most places. And for that, you don't need management because, you know, you can monitor your logs, you know, you can inventory your hardware and your software, you can do your vulnerability scans, you can do your administrative privileges. I mean, there is a lot that you can do without having to go, hey, boss, you know what I mean?
Exactly.
So, anyway. Do you have anything else?
No, I think this is good. If you want to take a look at our show notes, you can go to section9.us. And if you have any comments or questions, you can email us at info@section9.us.
Thank you for listening.
Thanks for listening.